I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. In 1968, in response to the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and urban riots that broke out across the country, Congress passed the Fair Housing Act, which directed the government to, quote-unquote, affirmatively further fair housing. Exactly what that means remains unclear, but the goal was to integrate minorities into housing that was in predominantly white areas. ProPublica's Nicole Hannah-Jones conducted an investigation into how the law has been implemented and enforced, and what she found will surprise most people. Hannah-Jones is an award-winning reporter who joined ProPublica late last year after stints at the Oregonian and the Raleigh News and Observer. Welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Thank you, Mike.
So your report's packed with information, so let's start at the beginning. Who was the secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development who was charged with implementing the law, and what did he do to go about that?
So George Romney was the first secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development right after the Fair Housing Act was passed. He was appointed by Richard Nixon, and of course George Romney is none other than presidential candidate Mitt Romney's father. George Romney had been the governor of Michigan prior to coming to work for HUD, and he had been deeply, deeply influenced by what he saw during the 1967 Detroit riots. Those riots were some of the worst in the history of our nation, and he believed that housing segregation that had forced African Americans to live in kind of deplorable ghetto conditions was the cause of those riots. And so he took that imagery with him to the department. And he decided that he was going to follow the law, and by that, he was going to start withholding federal dollars from white suburbs that refused to take affordable housing.
And that caused a huge uproar.
Yes. As you can imagine, integration was not something that a lot of these white suburbs wanted. They had specifically set up zoning to keep out the type of housing that many African Americans could afford. So when Romney started talking about withholding their money, they went straight to the president.
And what did Nixon, how did Nixon respond?
Nixon was not pleased. Nixon had come into the White House by developing what we all know today as the Southern Strategy. And in the Southern Strategy, he used the strategy of race to drive a wedge between disaffected members of the Democratic Party to bring them into the Republican Party. And then he also joined together a coalition of those former white Democrats with whites from the suburbs.
So Nixon wanted no part of trying to integrate. And in fact, you reported that he wrote a memo that said, "I am convinced that while legal segregation is totally wrong, that forced integration of housing or education is just as wrong."
Yes.
So Nixon and Romney were at a loggerheads. How did they resolve that?
So what happened is Nixon basically froze Romney out of the administration. He stopped meeting with him. We went to the Bentley Historical Library at the University of Michigan, where George Romney's papers are filed, and you can see his growing frustration as he keeps requesting meetings with the president, and the president won't meet with him. Nixon tried to get him to take the ambassadorship of Mexico, and when Romney said no, he just basically lost all authority, and within a few months, he resigned.
Talk about the culture of HUD. Why haven't they gone all out to enforce the provisions of the law?
So HUD is an agency that's been conflicted about its role as civil rights enforcer from the start. HUD was launched in 1965, and it was designed to merge a bunch of different housing and development programs that had explicitly discriminated against African Americans. Then 3 years later, overnight, this agency was then charged with enforcing civil rights law against housing discrimination. So as you can imagine, that would cause a bit of a problem. From the start, the Fair Housing Office was understaffed and underfunded, and it's kind of remained. So people say that it's continually been marginalized at the agency.
HUD has kind of a conflicting mandate. Explain that a little bit.
Well, if you talk to people at HUD, they would say that their key mandate is to develop housing, to get money out to communities and developers as quickly and easily as possible. And then you have this one office that is supposed to enforce civil rights law. Their job is to say no. Their job is to say, we need to hold up this money because this community isn't doing what it's supposed to do. And so you can imagine there's always that tension.
Now, what are the communities supposed to do?
So the communities are supposed to, quote unquote, affirmatively further fair housing. And what that means is in taking federal money, they're supposed to look at the obstacles to open housing and come up with a plan to eradicate those obstacles. And that's what they are supposed to do in order to get that money.
Now, there was a county in Maryland that took it upon itself without prompting from HUD to integrate. How did that work out?
Yes. Yeah, so when we were writing the story, we felt that so many people believe that segregation was kind of just a natural occurrence. And we wanted to show that it didn't have to be that way and that if a community took it seriously, took integration seriously, it could actually have results. So we looked to Montgomery County, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., and we found that around the same time that the Community Development Act was being passed in Congress in 1974, and that was the act that created the grant program that's tied to affirmatively furthering fair housing.
Nicole, what could HUD do to require cities to abide by the law?
So in 1974, with the Community Development Act, HUD created this large grant program called the Community Development Block Grant Program. It's an entitlement program, meaning that cities, towns, states, and counties automatically receive it every year. And the only way that they don't receive it is if they're somehow not complying with some regulation, including civil rights law, including the Fair Housing Act. So what this did, it was actually a great opportunity for HUD to kind of wield its authority because it was a single choke point for which HUD could cut off the money to a community, a substantial amount of money, if a community was not complying.
How much money are we talking about?
So since the Community Development Act was passed, it's about $137 billion that HUD has given to about 1,200 communities across the country.
And do they actually take the time to look and see that cities are you know, living up to the requirements?
No. So what I found in my investigation is HUD doesn't even check. The cities and counties are not required to turn in their paperwork that shows compliance. They're supposed to do a study called an analysis of impediments that shows we've looked at the obstacles, we've identified them, and this is what we're doing about them. But HUD checks maybe, you know, a couple dozen every year.
And how many times has HUD taken away money for noncompliance?
Well, this is one of the more astounding facts that I found out. Twice. As far as anybody can tell.
Twice since
1974. And those two times, as far as we know, have occurred under the Obama administration.
Now, there was a county in Maryland that took it upon itself without prompting from HUD to integrate. How did that work out?
Yes. Yeah, so when we were writing the story, we felt that so many people believe that segregation was kind of just a natural occurrence. And we wanted to show that it didn't have to be that way and that if a community took it seriously, took integration seriously, it could actually have results. So we looked to Montgomery County, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., and we found that around the same time that the Community Development Act was being passed in Congress in 1974, and that was the act that created the grant program that's tied to affirmatively furthering fair housing. Montgomery County was passing the very first inclusionary zoning ordinance in the country. And what that ordinance said was, if you build any sizable development, you have to include at least 15% of the housing in that development has to be affordable.
What spurred that? It was the right thing to do?
It was not an easy thing to get past. There were a group of elected officials who had been very much influenced by the civil rights movement. A housing study had come out a few years before the passage that showed that African Americans were living in shacks and without running water and access to sewer. And this group of elected officials decided that they were going to do something about it. And it's been very successful. It's produced more affordable housing than any other ordinance in the country. Montgomery County has one of the lowest segregation indices of any communities with substantial number of African Americans. The national average is about 59%, and Montgomery County's is 40%.
So if the will is there, it can actually be done.
Yes.
You use the phrase affirmatively further several times in the piece. Has that been defined, or can you explain what exactly that means?
Well, that's kind of the problem, and that's what the thrust of my piece gets at is this law was passed kind of very hurriedly, and this was not defined precisely. So while the words affirmatively further are in the law, it didn't say what the government has to do specifically to bring about integrated housing and what a community has to do to comply with affirmatively further. But we do know a little bit from what was happening at that time. It's kind of a twin of affirmative action. And affirmative action said that, you know, it's not enough just to stop the discrimination. The government has to actively work to overcome the past practices of discrimination. And that was a similar sentiment with affirmatively further and fair housing. Because the government had played such a big role in creating the segregation in the first place, it wasn't enough for the government just to say, okay, from this day forward, you can't discriminate. The law said, no, the government has to actually actively work to break down the segregation it helped create.
HUD secretaries after Romney have all had trouble sort of defining that phrase or implementing that?
I wouldn't say they had trouble. I would say that most HUD secretaries have ignored that provision. You had, after Romney, Nixon made it very clear that the Fair Housing Act was going to be read in a very narrow way, and that was going to be that it was only to deal with direct acts of discrimination, and the government didn't have a role to play in integration. And so you had a succession of both Democratic and Republican administrations after that that followed that same view for the most part.
Okay. Now, what's happened with HUD and fair housing under contemporary presidents? For instance, Henry Cisneros and Andrew Cuomo were HUD secretaries under Clinton. What did they do?
So interestingly enough, Henry Cisneros came into HUD also deeply influenced by riots. This time, he was deeply influenced by the L.A. riots that occurred after motorist Rodney King was beaten by police and the police officers were eventually acquitted. President Clinton actually chose him because of some of the ways that he talked about what he experienced during the riots. So Henry Cisneros came into HUD with a determination that he too was going to tackle segregation because he also believed segregation had led to the riots. And he made some efforts to do that. And shortly thereafter, he only had about 2 years before Republicans took over the Congress. And once that happened, a lot of those efforts came to an end. Henry Cisneros was eventually kind of forced out as well over an investigation.
In a scandal. Right, mm-hmm. Right. What about Cuomo, though? He also had a background in housing development.
He did. And in some ways, he tried to further Henry Cisneros' work. He tried to release regulations that would, for the first time, define specifically what communities had to do to comply with the law. And when they issued their proposed regulation, their cities and counties revolted. And as has often been the case when it comes to civil rights, the administration backed down, and those regulations were never released.
And what about Obama? How has he performed on enforcing?
Obama's record is very mixed. There were lots of high hopes when he first came into office. He really strengthened the civil rights department at the Justice Department, and when he got involved with the landmark fair housing settlement out of Westchester, people believed that there was going to be some big change in fair housing for the first time in decades. But in the end, you haven't seen the strong enforcement of the Westchester court order. And the Obama administration also promised that they would release regulations on affirmatively furthering fair housing 2 years past the time they said they were going to do it. They haven't. And of course, if he's not reelected, it's unlikely that it is going to happen at all.
Why is this a ProPublica investigation?
It's a ProPublica investigation because we have a law that was passed 40 years ago, and it was intended to get at the most intimate kind of racial division, which is where you live. And every other racial inequity comes back to that. If you go to a segregated school, it's because you live in a segregated neighborhood. If you can't access good doctors, it's because you live in a segregated neighborhood. If you can't find a well-paying job, it's often because of the neighborhood you live in. So you had this law that was supposed to work to rectify these inequities, and it's been ignored. And that's the kind of work that ProPublica does.
Nicole, it's a fantastic investigation, and I hope our listeners will take some time to read it. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
That was Nicole Hannah-Jones. You can read her story at ProPublica.org/fairhousing. And now for our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. Don't get me wrong. Happiness is a wonderful emotion and a state to be desired. But is that what our founders really intended to be the pursuit of our country and its people? To be happy? Who said it? Former Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum, while reflecting on our unalienable rights in his book, American Patriots. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to Minhee Cho for producing and to you for listening. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll catch you next time.